Ready, ready, ready?
Oh, I'm ready. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Never gonna hike it? You're just gonna keep going?
No hiking here.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I just realized if you look at our outfits, they really show where we live.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude, it was cold today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like 5 degrees.
And oh, like, okay.
The wind chill sucks. Especially along the lake, it sucks.
Yeah, it's December, man. Yeah. I forget what December means in Michigan.
Yeah.
Actually, I just saw you wearing the sweatshirt, and I figured, oh, it's probably like 30 odd degrees, and you say, oh, so you're still probably trying to warm up from working outside, or what?
Yeah. I mean, the apartment's nice and warm, but outside it's very, very chilly.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do not miss that, and you're working outside, right?
Yeah, it sucks.
All right, that's a good breakthrough to today's episode. Yeah. We talk about negativity and positivity. Yeah. So, what kind of positivity can you share to us from what happened today when it's 5 degrees out?
Well, today the positivity was I didn't really have to work outside a whole lot today. So, whereas opposed to yesterday, it was very cold out and I had to work outside pretty much all day yesterday. So today was better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's how you turn that into positivity.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
So I think for me going into this episode, it's important to realize that both positivity and maybe not specifically the term negativity, but certain aspects of negativity are important in life. I think oftentimes we'll get in like the personal development stage and it's all the hoorah, like, oh, be positive. You have to be positive. Always be positive. Never be negative. Never be a negative Nancy or anything like that. And I personally feel that they need to get segregated into their different aspects of life. So, for example, somebody who's an FBI investigator, if they're always positive and they always have a positive outlook on all the people that they're investigating or interrogating, and they just believe everything that they say, they're not going to be a very good FBI investigator. So they have to have some negative approach. They have to be able to see and ask more questions and not really believe everything that they hear. And when they have contradictory stories, to be able to ask deeper questions, to be able to weed that out and to see where those lies go. And I would say one of the aspects of that that goes into the normal daily life is that when you have someone who you've considered a really good friend or they've always been there and you guys have always been really close, and they start doing stuff that's maybe out of the ordinary or they start acting a little differently, I would say that that's one time where if it's happened on a continual basis where you keep an eye out for something like that and you start recognizing those signs and you ask deeper questions, and it's not always just when weird things happen to someone who normally does things a different way, there's usually a reason for that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's very helpful to be able to see that, to recognize it early. And then especially if it's an investment opportunity, like you're investing with someone and they're asking for more and more money and things just don't seem to be the way that they were at the very beginning, it might be a good opportunity to hold off. Or, you know, you're investing in stocks or something like that and they've always been going up like that, and then you start reading their analysis or their monthly reports, looking to the board reports and those types of things, and you start hearing some things that don't sound like they've always sounded, might be a point in time where you hold off on investing into that company in the future. So I would say it's having more of those investigative lenses on to do that. The third aspect of maybe being more negative, and I would say this is being more confident, really applies to sports. So inside of sports, especially if it's an individualized sport, when you're on a team, it's a little bit different. But in order to be confident and to be successful, you have to truly believe that you are the best player out there. If I go into a game and I don't believe that, or I think everybody is just as good as me, whenever an important moment arises inside of that game or the pressure turns on, those thoughts come up into your head and they don't put you into what I would say a positive mental state to be able to be effective and compete well. So and I think it's more of a negative outlook on the other people and it's a positive outlook on yourself. So being more confident maybe is what it is. I remember when I was watching like maybe the Yankees this year or just baseball in general, in Michigan, it's cold. And so we played baseball when it was cold. And one thing I always tried to do, no matter how cold it was, that when I was in the on deck circle or I was going up to bat and it was cold, I was never doing that because any sign of that type of a weakness where I'm cold or I'm feeling that, I think that that can look as a negative response to a pitcher. So what I would always like to see, a pitcher doing something like that because he's cold. Whereas if I'm not cold, I have control over my body and I'm in an element to where I have confidence and I don't need to do that. You know, maybe you don't see that as such a weak move or anything like that, but it's just something that I had ingrained to always try to build confidence within myself in the batter's box. When I would go up to the plate, I would always try to smile at the pitcher just because of the fact that I was that confident that I was going to be better than the pitcher. Like, I always wanted to know that, like, I wasn't going up there mad or anything. It was just like, this is about to be real fun, dude. Like, it is going to be fun for me. You know, trying to have that type of maybe cocky attitude to and demeanor. I mean, what are your thoughts on those things?
I feel like it's all just kind of a balance, kind of like everything else in life. It's a yin yang. I mean, you can't have positivity without negativity, and you need to know how to balance between the two. It's like, like for your detective example, it's like, well, you can't be all positive, but then again, you can't be all negative because then you're just going to be so stubborn to the point where you don't believe anything that they say. And then the investigation is going to go absolutely nowhere. The case is going to go cold. It's going to go unsolved. And I don't know. It's just a balance of everything in life. It's like in any avenue you go, you have to have a balance between positivity and negativity, but it depends on the ventures that you go down. How much, like, is it 60-40? Is it 70-30? Is it 50-50? Like, it's kind of just up for debate. You have to pick in the moment. It's just like kind of one of those things you learn to navigate in life, I guess, is just that. And I think the whole body language thing that you were talking about with sports, I guess it's, I don't know. I guess I never really looked into it, but I guess when I was pitching or when I was hitting, I would never blow on my hands because they were cold per se, but it was cold out and I would be blowing on my hands. But that's just kind of like one of my habits that I got into. It was like just after every pitch, it kind of became my routine. And it's like, even when it's warm out, I do stuff like that. So I don't know. It's just everybody has their things. And it's just to get one up on your opponent or whatever, just to get that mind space on them, I guess.
Yeah, and I was saying it more so in a sign of weakness on a really cold day or something like that. I understand what you're doing. And again, this may not relate to anybody and everybody because we all have different ways of handling our confidence, but it goes back to that main focus of trying to be confident and showing some type of being in charge for yourself, right? So just because I think that I'm in charge doesn't mean that pitcher doesn't think he's in charge and I haven't just played a mental game with him or anything like that. But in my head, I'm trying to do that, to create that confidence inside of myself. Maybe so much not to just hopefully put that weakness on him, but to create and instill that confidence inside of me so that it's there. I would say golf was probably one of the most difficult sports where your mental approach to it has to be so spot on. And I think now if I were to start playing, I would be a better player because of just how mind messed up I was back then. Like, I was a very, very much a people pleaser. So I was always worried about how people would view me. And like, if I was up in a tee box, it would be like, it wasn't like my approach of, okay, I'm going to hit it over this corner. On some days it was, some days I was that confident, but sometimes it was like, oh, I see these people over there and I know them and I don't want to screw up here. It was like, oh, okay. Now I'm on the tee box and I just hit it over there. It was like, God dang it. And it's like, I just mind screwed myself. Mm-hmm. And how many times, you know, you do that, or it's like, oh wow. I'm four under going into eight. It was just like,
yeah. Wow. Yep.
Triple, like,
yeah. Bogey. That's where it goes down.
Okay, well, I've shot this before. Mm-hmm. It was like, this is the best round I've ever had. It's like, well, next hole.
Yeah.
Now it's not.
There it goes.
Yeah. And it's just like amazing. Like, it's like, okay, this doesn't matter. Like, I'm just doing what I have been able to do. The score doesn't matter. I keep playing the game at the best that I can, and the score doesn't matter. Those people out there, they don't matter. Like, I'm just hitting, I'm just swinging. If I make a bad shot here, you know, people aren't going to make fun of me. And if they do make fun of me, then I move on and I go. Mm-hmm. But it's that anxiety of the feeling of what happens if you have a bad shot or a bad score, or you don't do what you're trying to accomplish, right?
Yeah. Mind games, especially just with sports to an extent, but golf is the extremity of, you have to be in a good headspace or you're not going to play well at all. No matter your fundamentals, it doesn't matter. All that gets thrown out the window once you start messing with your head. And yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, no matter how good or bad you are. And I think that's just something that was so amazing. If you look at some of the best players, like Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, like, I would love to just be able to, like, be in a VR headset and be able to have Tiger Woods' mental approach inside of my mind that he had, what was it, like, the early 2000s?
Oh, yeah.
Like, just, could you just imagine what type of monster he thought he was? Like,
well,
I know. But I mean, he created that in his mind. I mean, his swing was like really, really good, but it's also so much of that mind, like when he's stepping over a putt and all those putts, like he had to make all those putts, all those chips. And it's just it's just unbelievable to see like somebody make that many good shots, dude, and play that well that many times. It's like, it's almost like it's accident. It's like it was an accident of how well he played because of how amazing he did it. I mean, obviously Jack Nicklaus has the record for majors and stuff like that, but he was playing against a different caliber of golfer than I think Tiger was, and it's just.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he talks about in his documentary that like, kind of his mindset was always, it was never I'm gonna go win the Masters. It's, I'm going to make the cut for the U.S. Open. I'm just going to make it to Sunday. Make it to Sunday, because if you don't make it to Sunday, you can't win the U.S. Open. You can't win the Masters. It's just making the cut. And then once you make the cut, then it's that next step, next step, next step. And then you're in the lead. It's, okay, maintain the lead, grow the lead. But it's never from the first day in the tournament. It's never to win. It's just always to make the cut and then take small incremental victories off of that, and that way just build off of that and then gain momentum. And that was his mentality, he said. So
he had a documentary,
it was like it was that ESPN thing, I can't remember,
like a 30 for 30.
No, it was like a, I can't remember how long it was, but it was a ESPN, or maybe it was PGA. It wasn't ESPN, I don't think. But it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It was a really good documentary, though.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I'm going to have to check that out. I didn't even know that there was such a thing. Yeah. I remember one of his first interviews, and I think he had just turned from an amateur, and somebody was interviewing him, and they're like, yeah, like, what are you expecting to do this tournament? And he's like, I'm expecting to win. They're just like, okay. Oh, like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And the guy like felt like an idiot because then he saw who Tiger was like 10 years later. And Tiger just came up, was like, well, like, I mean, what's the point of entering a tournament if you don't expect to win?
Right.
And I mean, realistically, like, do you think, like, if a golfer goes into a tournament and they, like, say, what are their approaches? Like, oh, I'd like to just make it to Sunday. Right. Like, that's not really, like, I mean, they're not going to win the tournament, I don't think. I just don't think that that's possible.
I don't think that's what he was saying with that, but it was just
more I didn't think that.
Yeah. It was just more so making the cut, because if you don't make the cut, then you won't win the tournament. It was just kind of like, I don't know, breaking it down, I guess.
You really think that his mindset was just that simplistic, though?
I mean, going into a tournament, it was, I think the whole grandiose idea of it was, I'm going to win every single tournament. I'm going to win the Masters this year, and I'm going to win every single major there is this year. But realistically, when it comes down to it, it's, okay, come game day, what are you focusing on? It's not shooting. It's limiting mistakes. It's gaining strokes where you can. It's making the cut. It's, I don't know, it's breaking things down into the small victories that will lead up to a big victory. His mindset when he gets on that first tee box is, okay, what do I do to win this tournament? And how can I win this tournament in one swing? It's breaking it down and just taking those small, small victories and just taking those advantages over his opponents, I guess.
It seems to me like he had the ability to have, I don't know if you would say very strong visions or what it was, but when he stepped up to the first tee box, he was somebody who was able to go up and see the shot and just vision the shot and vision the shot. And I think he did that every single shot. Mm. And specifically when he was hitting wedge shots or anything, you know, from the fairway, he was always hitting it to a specific part of a green, but each shot that he had, it had a shape. Mm-hmm. He was either hitting a draw or a fade, or he was doing this, or he was hitting it low, and he was hitting it. He was very, very aware of what he was going to be doing, and he had a plan for each and every shot versus, oh, okay, this is, I'm just going to try to hit it towards the hole. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, not hitting it towards the hole. It's going to go like this. It's going to go up, and that's how it's going to land. And this is the thing that I've always kind of wondered, is that I believe that Tiger Woods was more focused on what he was going to be doing in each individual shot, mm-hmm. that he didn't really have to focus on blocking things out. Like, it's like, right. Oh, well, weren't your knees knocking, like, with everybody cheering? And it's like, I don't know if he really was super aware of all of those things, or that he needed to block out those things, because he was so focused on what he was doing and had such a strong vision for how everything was going, to where he had to worry about that, which I think normal people like us, it's like, how do you even fathom mm-hmm. something like that? Like, it's like, wow, like, like, how did he block that stuff out? I was like, well, he may not have even had to block that stuff out, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just that hyper-focus, the ability to be hyper-focused on what you're doing. And it shows with, like, all of the clips of him on his upswing, and then he starts his downswing, and then somebody makes a noise, and he stops his downswing before impacting the ball. It's like, you know how much focus and just strength alone that takes to stop your swing when you're already on your downswing? That is, that is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, the ability to shot shape, his dude is insane. Just the ability to say, I'm going to hit this shot and it's going to go, oh, I'm going to hit a draw and it's going to go 194 yards. Not only that, but I'm going to hit a draw. It's going to start 20 yards left of that tree. And then it's going to go at this exact spot and this exact yardage. And it's just, he is just insane. His ability to shot shape and just maintain and focus on all of it.
What is so interesting to me is that golf is the one sport that's really not reactionary. And what I mean to that is that when you're trying to do something, you're accomplishing something, you have other people defending and going against that. Like any baseball player, isn't going to be like, oh, okay, I'm gonna envision this. I'm going to hit the ball here, and then it's going to go off and to the right. And like, it's like, no, I'm just reacting to whatever this pitcher throws me right now. Mm-hmm. If it's a curveball, it's outside, I guess I got to hit it that way. But mm-hmm. there's like usually like three or four things that could happen versus golf. It's like, well, there's only one thing that's going to happen that needs to happen in order to complete this task. Basketball, it's like, okay, well, but we got to go over here, hopefully drop a play, I guess, and it's a one-shot wonder hope chance, but you don't know where someone's going to be, how you're going to have to shape it or anything like that. That's what's very interesting about golf is that ability to have visions. So I guess going off into the other thing where it comes to the confidence and trying to think you're the best, I think it's really important when maybe you're an entrepreneur or you're trying to go out and make new friends that – you don't take this mindset and this approach where I'm the best. There's nobody else like me. There's nobody else good enough. And that's where you have to go out into an approach into the world where everybody else is good. And so I'm going to go out there and meet a lot of really, really good people. And that's where you kind of take down your guards of the judgments of, you know, always thinking you're better and saying, what can I learn from these individuals? How can I help these individuals? How can I be more expensive? Accepting of these individuals. And that's where you're able to have an approach where you go out and you actually see the best of the world, mm-hmm. have that positivity mindset and connect with a lot more people. Where if you go out with that investigative approach and you'd be like, that guy mixed up his words a little bit there. I wonder what he's trying to do here. It's just like, dude, you can get messed up in the mind to where you just go home and you don't meet anybody or do anything, you know?
Yeah. And it's kind of that whole conversation aspect of, sure, you guys may not have similar interests. And if it's just some random person, it's like, okay, well, they don't know anything about this topic. So you think they don't know anything about anything. But it's like everybody has some specific thing that they are super interested in and that they're super knowledgeable about. But it's just kind of getting to that point and learning how to direct conversation into what people are interested in, I guess. Because it's like everybody's super intelligent on something. It's what they care about, what they spend all their time doing. It's like you're going to learn what you do all the time, and you're going to be good at it, and you just have to find that in people.
Yeah, you have to find out what makes people tick, and I think that's something that's really important when it comes to managers. A really good manager has the ability to be able to comprehend why the employee is working there. And so what I mean by that is that sometimes it's because of the hours that enable the employee to be home with their family, or what, maybe they want to get out at 2 o'clock so they can go hit the gym, go golf, only work 4 days a week. Maybe sometimes it's because of the benefits that they get, the health benefits that they need. They have a family, maybe somebody's sick, they have to have that coverage. Maybe sometimes it's the pay. Sometimes it's the vacation time that they get 6 weeks vacation. Vacation's really important to them. If you can find out what aspect of the job that they have that is important to them and makes them tick, then you can incentivize them in those things. And you can also just kind of understand to when it comes to maybe time for disciplining them or finding out, you know, when there's things that are wrong, you can incentivize them in those other ways. You know, you made a mistake here. So this is an issue, you know, how can we fix this issue? And if you don't understand why somebody might be upset at work or on the job about how the job functions have changed or they're just not happy with them, if you don't know what makes them tick, then you're not going to really be able to comprehend why they're so upset about what it is that's happened.
Yeah. If you don't know what makes them upset, then how are you supposed to change what it is that makes them upset if you have no idea what's causing it in the first place?
Correct.
You need to kind of figure out what makes you upset. Like, if somebody doesn't like their job, you have to be able to determine, okay, this is what I don't like about my job. So if I go look at a different job, I'm going to look for these things in specific that this job's going to have, or this friendship or relationship or whatever. You have to realize what you like, what you don't like, and make a you have to evaluate what's more important, what's less important. Can you deal with this if you get this? It's just kind of balancing it all out.
Yeah. And something that's really important when it comes to managing a team, or also when you're in maybe customer service aspect, is that when there's an issue, let's say from a customer service aspect with a customer, and that customer, let's say that there's a bad refund policy, or they don't like the refund policy, and you say, listen, this has been our refund policy for the last 90 days. This is what it says. This is what it says. Like, I'm sorry, go find something else. That doesn't help the customer feel cared for, or it doesn't help with them. You have to be able to re-articulate, maybe reword whatever it is that you're sharing so that they can see the benefits of what it is and why this is important. And so, listen, we have a 90-day return policy so that I'll give the example of working in property management. And so oftentimes residents will be upset that after 2 hours, the guest parking, you have to pay for it. And so it's like the approach was previously is that, you get 2 free hours. So if you have to stay any longer than that, you have to pay $2 an hour. And it's always been like that. That's how it is. And so my approach is like, listen, we give you 2 free hours. Thereafter, you have to pay $2 an hour. The reason being is because we're in a very high traffic area here in this town, to where we have a lot of public businesses in the surrounding area. You have the post office right next door. You have the city amphitheater, where there's a lot of concerts on the weekends that are right there. So they charge for parking for these concerts. And if we just had free parking 24 hours, these people would be coming and parking in our parking garage, and our residents wouldn't be able to have any guests at all. Mm-hmm. So in order to mitigate that, we've had to start charging for parking, because again, we also have limited spots. We have 324 units, only have about 30 guest parking spots. And we want to make sure that there aren't guests that are just taking advantage of free parking and staying here days and days and days on end. Mm-hmm. So if you are going to have guests, you get 2 free hours. Thereafter, they want to stay longer, it's fine. They just have to pay a minimal fee. And that helps the resident understand much more so than saying, well, this is how it always be. It's like, that doesn't help them. Yeah. That doesn't give them anything. It's just like, it feels bad. And that's kind of where I wanted to go into this next aspect. You know, when you're trying to connect with people, you have to go with the mindset that they have the best intentions at heart, unless they prove otherwise. Specifically when it comes to our family and our friends, and I think it's very easy for us to come into these arguments and these disagreements and get upset about something when we haven't really understood the intentions of this specific person. And oftentimes it's because we've created expectations in our minds about what needs to happen, how things need to go. And when they don't go those specific ways, that is a deal breaker for us, and it upsets us and it frustrates us. But dude, if you look at oftentimes when there's arguments, when there's things that happen, oftentimes the person had good intentions. They just did it. They took an approach that was different than what we expected it to be. And that's what kind of caught us off guard and frustrated us.
Yeah. And it's just kind of being able to read the room and, I don't know, just being comfortable enough with everybody around you and realizing, kind of like we were talking about earlier, just kind of realizing whatever makes them tick. And it's like the whole idea of everybody looking at everybody with a positive mindset is you have to assume that people are trying to be the best person they can be, because if you just go out and look and it's everybody that makes you mad, you get mad at them for not looking at themselves and changing what they can do. But it's like, okay, you don't know what's going on in that person's life. You don't know what this person is struggling with behind doors. It's like, that could be the least of their worries. Like, they're not focusing on something like that. It's the majority, the vast, vast majority of people are trying to do the absolute best that they can do, and they're not trying to go out of their way to ruin your day. People just don't do that. It's people are just trying to be happy, and it's not helping when everybody goes out and blames each other immediately and just gets mad at everybody, and then everybody goes online anonymously and fights with each other, and it just causes a whole downward spiral, I guess.
Right. And I think this is the thing, is that oftentimes we think that their whole approach was so that they could take advantage of us, but they're usually the approach that we all take is that we have our own best interest at heart, mm-hmm. first and foremost. And so we're trying to go and do what we ourselves want. And sometimes it's not exactly what that other person wants. So it's not like somebody's trying to take advantage of you. It's just that they're looking out for themselves mm-hmm. more than they're looking out for anybody else. And where we take it in the attention, we're like, why the heck? Why? Like, why did he push this work over here? Like, this is my spot. Like, what the heck are you doing with all this? Like, I remember, like, just when I used to work at Kendrick's, like, so many times I would get so frustrated. I was like, dude, like, can you not put your stuff over here? Like, this is all my stuff. I'm setting it up over here. And be like, well, I got to put it somewhere. I was like, I know, but like, we got to keep my stuff here, your stuff here. These are going to go into two different trucks. If any of this stuff gets mixed up and it's on my truck, I'm all the way in Elkhart, Indiana. And you can't, I can't come all the way back to Sturgis, Michigan to pick this up because we put it in two different trucks. Like, I get that we got to just have it somewhere else. Like, it can't be here. Yeah. And so, you know, it wasn't that he was trying to devise my plan and make sure all my packages got put somewhere else, but it was just, this was closer to the door that he was going to have to go out to put it into his truck. And he was like, yeah, I get that. I know. But just like, put it somewhere else. Like, it just wait for me. He's like, well, no, I gotta go. It's like, Scott, like, you're going to get out of here at 1 o'clock anyways. Like, I'm going to be here until 3 o'clock. Like, he was like, well, I got to go cut yards. I was like, oh my, okay. I know. But like, just, we can't do this.
Yeah. It's like the whole saying of, don't attribute to malice, to which can be explained by incompetence. It's just like, you can't just always assume that people are out to get you. It's just sometimes people have no idea what they're doing or that they're even affecting you in the slightest, because everybody's got their own perspective on life and they're just trying to do best for themselves. It's like, people aren't, if everybody was caring about everybody else and never themselves, people wouldn't be happy, because it's like, you're just putting yourself below everybody. So why would they do that? You know?
Yeah, it's all of our own approach, right? I mean, if we have a family, I'm trying to protect my family. You're trying to protect your family. And I think that's where you like start throwing in like kids' sports. It's like, oh, well, no, that coach is picking him. Like, why is he picking him? Oh, he's probably friends with his dad. No, dude, like, the guy has to make a decision, okay? Yeah. There's only one person that can pitch, that can start off as pitcher. There's one person that can be lead off, one person that can be the fourth hitter. He's like, it's just like, this is what they got. Like, he had to do something. And if you're not mad about it, then that kid's mad. Kid's parents gonna be mad about it. You know what I mean? It's just like,
yeah. The idea of being on the same team, but just being mad at everybody on your team rather than just trying to beat the other team is, it's like, this coach has maybe no experience being a coach ever, and he's just trying to do his best, and parents yelling at him is not helping in the slightest little bit. It's
no.
Yeah.
Especially if he's just trying to be a coach, he doesn't really know how much about the sport works at all or anything like that. And everybody else was just too busy with work or day-to-day life or anything like that to even be willing to coach, being more appreciative of him there is pretty important.
Yeah, it's like, you get the guy with enough time free that he is capable of doing this. You don't get somebody that's constantly at work, constantly busy, because they don't get to get time off and get to practice every day, go to the games. They don't get that. It's you get the person with the most knowledge that has the free time available. It's, yeah, you don't get to pick and choose.
Or maybe sometimes it's not even the most knowledge. It's just the person has the most free time available to be able to do that. And that's what you're stuck with, which sometimes can be unfortunate because there are other people who are more well-suited to be able to help do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the importance with what we're talking about tonight is that you have to be able to turn these mindsets on and off depending on the situation that you're in. You know, if you want to win, you need to be able to be a little bit arrogant. But if you're a know-it-all and you're doing this all the time, then you're going to be someone who, when you have relationships and friendships, you're either going to be controlling people and they're just going to be your little minions and they're going to be your yes men, or you're going to have people that just don't want to be around you if you're the only one that is ever right. And whenever there's a disagreement, you're not empathetic or trying to understand, you know, where they're coming from. People aren't going to want to have those types of conversations with you. They're going to start shutting down. I think from a management position, right? If it's like you always have the best interest of the company at heart, and it's like, well, I don't care how this affects this employee. Like he's just here to have a job. It's like, well, right. Yeah. And so he's just here to have a job. And once he finds another job, he's going to go take that job. So if that's the game you want to play, you can do that. But in order to have healthy relationships and open communication, you have to be able to be empathetic and understanding when it comes to that. When it comes to being an athlete, you can have more of that arrogant mindset when you're up at the plate or, you know, standing on the tee box to be able to be successful.
Right. And there's that whole idea of, like, even when you're training an animal, like when you're training a dog or something, you want to give them positive reward and then negative reinforcement. It's if they do something good, you want to exemplify that they did something good. You want to be like, you want to give them a treat, pats. You want to tell them like, that's a good job, good boy, whatever. It's they learn through negative reinforcement and positive reward. It's if they do something bad, you don't reward them for that. You let them know that they did something bad so that they know not to do it again. And when they do something good, you want them to know that it was good so that they keep doing that. And people are a lot of the same way. It's if you show them what you are truly grateful for, then they're going to feel the impact of that and they're going to want to do it more. And if something upsets you, you let them know that in a civil way, not just starting an argument about it, because that's probably not going anywhere. But if you let them know about it, and more than likely, they're probably going to do that less and less, unless they have like a grudge against you or they're trying to make you mad or whatever. But you just have to let people know how you feel, and they're really not that different from training an animal. It's just the reward system in psychology in general.
And that's something that we just don't do as enough or as much as human beings. And I don't know if we're just not accustomed because we didn't grow up that way, but telling people that we love them, or every time someone does something that's beneficial to our lives, or maybe you get butterflies, or maybe it makes you feel really special, or they hold a door open for you, or those types of special moments, oftentimes we just take these things for granted and we just kind of pass through and go on without showing our appreciation. So like this week, there's one of the gyms that I go to, there's a guy it's a trainer. He's always there and he always has like really good energy and he's always smiling. And it's just like, when you go in and you see him, it's just like, hey, like, you know, it's like you always want to wave at him because he's happy and he smiles. And like for me this week, it was just like, man, like, dude, this guy's just a really good guy. And I wanted to go up. He's like, hey, man, every time I come here to the gym, I really enjoy being here and just seeing your positive energy. It's really enjoyable to be around. And I don't know how that affected him or how it didn't affect him, but I know how each and every day his energy affects me when I go to that gym. And it's really, really special. And so why aren't we taking these types of moments when there are special things that happens to us to be able to share those with maybe, you know, our siblings, our significant others, our coworkers, you know, when they do a good job. Like somebody had 3 sales this week. It was like, hey, like, congrats. Like you really did a good job. And again, it's not that they just did a good job this week, but it's that their actions had rewards this week because of the people that came in and, you know, or you deal with a situation of confrontation in the work and how they handle something. Or like, we don't compliment people enough, but we're quick to judge and argue and tell them when they're wrong. You know, that it's always easy to do that. I think if you go and you look at probably Google reviews, and this would be interesting to do a case study on if there's more positive Google reviews or negative Google reviews, I would have to assume that it's negative.
Far negative.
Yeah, I would think so too. I mean, if you look at some restaurants, there are some restaurants that have, you know, your 4.5 stars. So that would mean that they have more positive than negative.
Right.
But I think if we were to think about our loved ones and think about the times that they've either given me a compliment or I guess what's the opposite of compliment?
Scolded you, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Or a compliment versus tried to create an argument or picked you apart.
Right.
You know, what would we have to say? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's important to take that into consideration when we want to have positive communication or care about someone. And I think that's when you go also back into the love languages, because sometimes like you can love someone in your way of loving them on a constant and continual basis, and they don't really even realize that that's you loving them, because that's not how they want to be loved. You know,
right.
Like for me, quality time is really, really important. So I want to spend as much quality time as I can with someone. And so that's how I'm showing them love, because that's how I like to be loved. But it's just like, well, Chad, my love language isn't quality time. So like, this isn't really helping. I was like, oh, crap. Okay. Well, you know what I mean? Like if it's gifts or if it's physical touch or whatever it is, it's like, oh man, I swear I wasted, like, I just gave you 40 hours of quality time and it didn't count for anything. Like that's no bueno. Like that didn't give me any check marks.
Yeah. No brownie points for you. But yeah, it's like, like the whole love languages thing, it's your love language may be just self-improvement and improvement in general and seeing progress in people. And you keep like nitpicking the things, and it seems like nitpicking, but you're just looking for ways for people to improve and you're trying to help them in that way. But if it's always trying to see improvement and never rewarding the good and seeing the good that you're doing, it seems like, and is this not good enough? Like, am I not doing a good job regardless of how good you're doing? Because this person's always trying to pick at it and something, see you could be doing something better. So I don't know. It's just people, everybody is different, and the human psychology is so, so different, varying from person to person, regardless of how close you are. It's everybody is living a different life by very marginal amounts or very extreme amounts.
Wow. That's something that I needed to hear, because I'm very much so a perfectionist. And so I am always speaking to myself like this. And how can I be better? How can I do this? And so I assume that this is how I should speak to everybody else. And so I'm always speaking to people like this, because it's like, yeah, self-improvement is a huge part of my life. And I just want to like, always like, let's go. Like, okay, now what? Because that's me. That's like, that's how I do. And I'm not very good at encouraging myself and giving myself grace and saying, hey, great job, Chad. Like, you did a really good job. Like, it's awesome, you know? Yeah. And so that really spoke to me because it's exactly who I am.
Yeah, I think we're kind of all like that on ourselves at some point, but it's kind of like the whole balance thing. Again, it's you have to know when to be self-improvement, where to improve, but you also have to know when to be empathetic or sympathetic to yourself and kind of give yourself a break on some of the things that you realize you're working hard on it. And you just have to realize sometimes that's just not how it goes, or sometimes maybe you need more work, but you're doing a good thing. And I don't know, if it's always improvement, 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 you never stop to smell the roses, and you never really notice what's going on that's going well in your life. And that is very, very demotivating a lot of the time.
So growing up as a little brother of mine, did you struggle with that? Well, I mean, if I take the approach of like coaching you in baseball and sports and stuff like that, I mean, it was always trying to help you improve. Like, that has just right. always been my mindset for myself, though, as well. And so I guess for me, it's like, okay, this season's over. Let's go to next season. Now we're trying to win next season versus maybe just smelling the roses, like you're saying, when it comes to sports. And life, man, like, especially when it comes to business, it's really hard because I'm always trying to grind to try to win, to try to go on to the next. And so there aren't really many things I celebrate in life that much. For me, celebrating comes by spending time with family and laughing. And so just having those small moments and that enjoyable thing, that's the winning for me. And now it's always like, let's get back into it. So it's not so much where I win in the specific game of business and I enjoy it and I kind of like maybe flatline and just kind of cruise along for a little bit. It's like I'm always just trying to go in business. And then when it comes to real life, I try to do my celebrating there.
Yeah. I guess to answer your question, growing up, it was never something that I really struggled with because I kind of always saw the vision. I saw that you wanting to improve and you wanting me to improve. So I was kind of appreciative of that. It was never really to the point where we didn't really celebrate anything. I mean, I always felt very acknowledged, and I don't know. I guess I never really felt that coming from you. It's I kind of saw where you were coming from and the purpose for it, so I guess it didn't really bother me.
Because I've heard a number of people that have tried to play professional sports, some have even played professional sports, and then when their career ends, they've shared that they've been happy, and they were sharing that it was such a grind that it was just so hard. And for me, when baseball ended, I was really sad. And I enjoyed the process so much to where I never felt like somebody was forcing me to do something, but I had also made baseball life. Like when I was in college, our lifting protocol started at 5 a.m. and then it went to, was it 5 to 6? And then I would stay after everybody left and go from 6 to 7 to lift on my own. Mm-hmm. And then I would go have breakfast in the cafeteria, and then we would go to class, and then class would go usually from like 9 to 1 or 2, and then I think practice usually started at 2 or 3, and it would go till 4. Yeah, it would go for 5 to 6 because sometimes the cafeteria was closing before we just got out of practice. And so we'd go eat. And then after that, I would either go to the gym again or I would go to the batting cages and practice. And so it was like, I think the only way that I could have been pushed any harder was been like to spend more hours in the batting cages. And nobody ever did that to me. But I was also pushing myself to about the absolute